Excellent. Thank you, everybody. We're so happy to be here today. And Mona and I have been working together for many, many years. I'm the director of the doctoral program in health leadership at UNC Chapel Hill in the Department of Health Policy and Management. And Mona Kalani is a PhD student in our department. She has been working as the teaching assistant for the doctoral program, and I will say the co-director for the past 4 years, and we are really delighted to be presenting here together today. And in the back of the room, Jeannie Alangi is also, I will call her out, Jeannie is also a graduate of our program. So thanks to everybody. Mona and I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. So today we'd like to briefly describe for you an approach, our unique approach, we think, to practice-based doctoral dissertations. We'd like to talk a bit about the differences and commonalities among the many different practice-based dissertations that are products of our doctoral program, and talk about some of the lessons we've learned that may be of interest to you and helpful to some of you in the development of your own programs in health leadership, as well as implementation science, as so many of us around the country and around the world try to flesh out exactly what that means. So by way of introduction and background, our doctoral program at UNC was launched in 2005, and it was designed from the start to be used with internet video. In other words, all of the coursework in our program is delivered synchronously in 3-hour chunks of time that occur once a week using internet video. So the students are scattered all over the globe, and we connect in real time. We see each other and hear each other every week. And the emphasis of the curriculum is leadership development. So it's an interdisciplinary program. People enter the program from many, many backgrounds. We have veterinarians, lawyers, doctors, nurses, allied health professionals, and others that come from more entrepreneurial or non-traditional backgrounds. But everybody is working in some capacity in which they can influence the public's health. And all of them are committed to taking top jobs when they finish the degree program. We want to produce top leaders that are committed to improving the public's health. So we target mid-career professionals who are working full-time, either domestically or internationally. And as I mentioned, we have our students scattered all over the world, as far away as the highlands of Papua New Guinea, and this year admitted our first student from Central Asia, from Kazakhstan. So the program is 3 years long. It is cohort-based, so everybody starts the program in August, and they move in lockstep through the program with each other, taking the same classes at the same time. And the program confers a DRPH in health administration. So the coursework is completed within the first 2 years, and that includes 3 short visits to Chapel Hill in each of years 1 and 2. So students collect from all over the world. They come to Chapel Hill for 3 or 4 days at a time in mid-August, in early January, and again in mid-May. And then they work on their dissertations in year 3. So since 2005, 46 dissertations have successfully been completed. 55 students are at varying stages of dissertation development. So of those, roughly half are working on their coursework, and another half have completed the coursework and their comprehensive written exams, and they've successfully defended a dissertation proposal and are working on their dissertations. This is just a quick picture of the cohort that we just admitted this year. So the program is in its 9th year. When the program started, we had a cohort of 9, and we have inched it up slowly to the present cohort of 15, which is the largest cohort we've ever had and the most we will ever take, because we really feel it's very important for this particular program, being a distance program and a doctoral program, that you can't teach leadership didactically. We feel very strongly that it has to be learned experientially, and that a highly interactive classroom setting is required for that. And we feel like 15 people in a classroom is about the max that we would like to see to enable really rich discussion and everybody's participation. So this is a picture of our virtual classroom. This will give you a feel for what the classes look like as they are typically held. And so everybody's video image is up there on the screen, and there's a chat box in the upper left-hand corner you can see. And we can have live data sharing. This is using Adobe Connect. Some of our students that are scattered around the globe connect to the audio bridge line. We actually do use an audio bridge. We don't use voice over internet because we have not found it to be all that high quality. So some of our students connect to an audio bridge line using Skype. We're constantly fiddling with the technology and working with it as it evolves, and it has evolved quite rapidly, quite substantially over the years, as both Jeannie and Mona can tell you. So let's talk about the dissertation design. Our students are asked to identify a substantial and complex problem within their organizations or externally a larger policy problem. And we want them to emphasize key concepts in implementation science. In other words, we want them, when they are finished, to have taken in a scholarly and systematic way, collected evidence, learned about the problem, collected evidence, and bringing to bear leadership principles, taken that evidence to create a plan for change that, if implemented, would improve the public's health. We don't require our students to actually implement the plan for change before they graduate. We want them to graduate. And afterwards, they all commit to seeing their plans for change through. So as many of you know, the NIH defines implementation science as the study of methods to promote the integration of research findings and evidence into healthcare policy and practice. And we feel many of us have been doing that a long time, and that's what this doctoral program dissertation is all about. So again, the dissertation culminates in a plan that applies leadership strategies to guide implementation of organizational or policy change. So the ultimate goal is to combine practice-based research with leadership skills to create a plan that, if implemented, and with a high likelihood that it will be implemented, will improve the public's health. So we've just added a couple of slides to show you a sampling of some of the dissertation titles that have been produced. These are some of the international topics that have been covered, and they are quite wide-ranging. As you can imagine, we again have students from many different backgrounds functioning in many different kinds of settings all over the world in low, middle, and high-income countries. So the dissertations are quite diverse. We also have domestic students scattered all over the U.S., again, working in all different types of organizations. And their dissertations are really interesting, quite wide-ranging. At the end of this presentation, I'll include a couple of web links, but you can go to our program website for a full listing of all of the dissertations that have come out of our program with links to those abstracts if you're interested. And now I'm going to turn the mic over to Mona, and she'll give you some information about an analysis, a recent analysis that we've done on our completed dissertations to date.
So we reviewed the 46 dissertations that have been completed so far just to get a feel for themes and commonalities and maybe not so many commonalities between the topics and the research being conducted. We found that the time to completion is about 3.5 years in the program. As you can see, it is a wide range, but actually quite a few students are completing it within the three and a half years, which would be about from the starting point in August to about December or so of what would be within the fourth year. As Sue mentioned, and you can see from the dissertation topics, we have quite a wide range, and we have students, as we've already said, coming from many different organizations, many different public health topic areas, and so we've had global health, HIV, AIDS, cancer, lots of public health department related topics, and organizational change types of topics as well. They're very interested in quality improvement, how to incorporate health reform into the work that they're doing, how to better monitor and evaluate the public's health and as well as the work in the programs that they're working on. Within the actual research aims, there's again wide variation depending on the topic and what they're trying to evaluate. Several of them are looking at strengths and barriers of programs and organizational structures. They're looking at how to improve and succeed with implementation of, again, programs and overall organizational efforts. In terms of research design, the students in the program seem to lean towards qualitative methods. We've had about 60% of the dissertations did qualitative methods, which includes case studies, key informant interviews, document reviews, focus groups, the standard qualitative methods. And then the other dissertations have either a mixed methods approach or do quantitative methods with regressions and survival analyses and that type of focus. And then when you get into the plan for change, which is really the crux of this dissertation, we really try, the students do a great job at emphasizing the theoretical framework of how to actually implement a plan for change and what are key leadership and strategies to make a successful plan, not just a plan that we can put out there, but something that can actually be successful at making the changes from the results that they identified in their research. And those theories tend to come from John Cotter, Donella Meadows, John Kingdon. Those are kind of the key three theories that the students are using, but they're shown a wide range of strategies, and it depends on their topic area what they choose as the key framework. In terms of the content of the plans for change, it's also quite varied, but you get a lot of oral and written dissemination, both internally and externally. There's an emphasis of bringing plans within the organization to make change within the organization, but also on a broader scale. And so there's an emphasis on key stakeholders outside of the organization, within the organization, and then also talking to policymakers on the outside to put these plans for change into practice. We've had students do webinars, write papers in more professionally oriented journals. They do talks at national conferences like this and NACHO and places like that they're actually getting the information out there. And the students email us constantly with, "Oh, Sue, Mona, we've done this talk and we've written this paper," and we try to pass this information on to the students so that they can see where they can take their plans for change and how it actually can be turned into practice.
But the thing that we are most concerned about is not just that they are presenting like this at a professional association meeting, but rather that they are able to apply leadership principles to ensure that these plans are not going to stay on the shelf and are actually going to be implemented by people. And so, you know, that's what this is all about. And, you know, how, you know, we describe leadership as how do you influence people over whom you have no control. And so as Mona mentioned, there is a lot of discussion in the plans about such things as creating a guiding coalition, creating a sense of urgency, you know, doing other, applying other principles to help ensure that the plan for the implementation plan really has feet. Our curriculum is really very tightly choreographed. So students walk through the program in a very efficient manner. Every class they take helps them to take a step further along in the development of their dissertation proposals and ultimately in their dissertation. So if they play their cards right, for example, the systematic review course that they take will culminate in something that can be a chapter in their dissertation. So the the program curriculum is designed to help them get an early start on their dissertations. We also encourage them to use secondary data. When they use primary data, those are primarily in the form of interview, key informant interview data, occasionally focus group data, but otherwise it's secondary. And as Mona mentioned, because the majority of our students do use qualitative methods to collect their data, we have tweaked our curriculum in the past year. You know, after 9 years, the curriculum actually worked beautifully as designed, but we flowed through some tweaks this past year that included greater emphasis on qualitative methods. And we've also put into place students at the end of the first year take a dissertation prep course that helps them pull together the basic pieces of the dissertation proposal, and then they keep working on that through the second year of coursework in the program. But now, at the end of the second year, we've included one credit hour module in the spring and another one credit module in the summer to help give them some additional momentum at moving ahead with that dissertation proposal, which we expect is defended at the end of the second year.
Mm-hmm. And then one other thing we added in the third year was really emphasizing maintaining connection with your cohort. One of the things that happens is you stop taking courses, you pass your comprehensive exams, and then because you're working remotely, you lose connection, that regular weekly connection that you had while you were taking courses every week. And so what we've really promoted is get together as a cohort, find a time that you can all potentially meet maybe once a month, however, bi-monthly, whatever works best for your cohort, and just get together, share where you're at with your dissertation, share either good things that happen, bad things that happen, get advice, and just really support each other through the process, and that's been a great benefit to the students.
So in terms of our long-term evaluation plans for the program, we do track our alumni, and we're tracking Eugenie back here at the back of the room, and assessing the program competencies, but also we are very interested in the success our graduates have in implementing their dissertation plans for change, and the sort of impact that we can document from those plans post-graduation. So that was just a brief overview of what we are doing in the doctoral program in health leadership at UNC. And you can visit us online at www.sph.unc.edu/hpaa/executive_drph/. You can also visit us at UNC Doc Global for more information about efforts that are underway to work with schools around the world to develop similar programs in the hopes that we might collaborate and cooperate and create a network of programs designed similarly. So thank you for your attention.
Okay, we obviously have ample time for questions regarding any of the presentations, so be thinking of things that you'd like to ask or clarify. Yes, ma'am.
Just with the last presentation, I'm just curious about the committee structure for the dissertations, and if you all took it out remotely, how did that happen?
Would you repeat the question?
Sure. The question was about how we manage our dissertation committees. We have five committee members, three of which have to be regular graduate faculty members from the School of Public Health. Two can be external. And I would say that increasingly over the years, as the proportion of students in the program have been international, more of the dissertation proposals and the final dissertations have been defended via distance. So we sometimes have one or more committee members present in Chapel Hill for the dissertation defense, but other committee members can be scattered all over the globe. And we get together using Adobe Connect, and the defense process looks very much like any other traditional doctoral program defense, dissertation defense. I participated in one defense where I was in Paris, somebody else was in Lebanon, we had a couple of people in Chapel Hill. You know, we were scattered all over the globe, and increasingly for reasons of cost, our students, especially those that are, you know, in far-flung places around the world, you know, would prefer to remain where they are and conduct their defense via distance. So it works. It works beautifully. You know, over the years, we used to hear people say because this was the very first distance doctoral program anywhere in the world that we're aware of, and from the very start, people used to say it'll never work. How are you going to navigate those time zone differences? And we've been so pleasantly surprised over the years that the issue of time zone differences is so minor. People are so happy to be connected with each other. They're so amazed that it works as well as it does. And the issue of time zone differences is just really almost inconsequential.
Students are allowed to often have somebody from their organization, especially when their topic relates to something they're doing in their organization. They do have somebody from their organization on the committee, and is sometimes in the room with them when they're doing their defense.
Other questions? Yes.
No, I only thought her the last time. That might be relevant, but okay. I'm wondering about kind of making the case for continued investment. I know you have a plan for evaluating when you're tracking everybody, but how do you kind of keep it alive? Because I think we kind of know that leadership's important, but have a difficult time continuing trying to provide the evidence base for that. And you've clearly had it for 9 years now, so I don't know if anybody else wants to
comment.
And would you, John, could you repeat the question? Because I'm not sure I heard the first part of it.
Yeah, if I'm hearing you accurately, your question relates to the momentum, keeping leadership development at the forefront and down the road as these programs, all of these efforts sort of have achieved success, but where do we go from here to maintain?
Right, and how do you make that case? What are the evidence that you're using to continue to...
Okay, and using evidence to make the case for continuation. Okay. Mm-hmm. Would you like to respond?
Yeah. Would one of you have? Okay. So the question is, how do you collect evidence to evidence on the effectiveness of leadership training? And we look for impact on, we look for near-term, mid-term, long-term, you know, evidence of impact. So in the short term, if you can identify the goals that your change was supposed to create and, you know, document some of those near-term goals. So it may be something as simple as bringing people together, changing a policy, noting that X number of people have completed a project, and then in the midterm it may be that the process has continued to evolve, that there have been continued changes moving in the direction of your goal, and in long-term, you know, system changes or evidence that others have made changes based on your example. You know, those are just a few of the examples I can think of. And they're varied because, you know, the kinds of projects that we're looking at are quite varied. But, you know, in terms of how we keep in touch with our alums and track their progress, we find that our cohort model creates very tightly bonded groups of people. As Mona and Jeannie can attest, our alums and current students keep in touch. Some of those that have graduated from our first cohort are still in touch. They still get together. They're close colleagues. They find each other's either jobs. They collaborate with each other via distance. They you know, they socialize and professionally maintain tight relationships. And so in this program, we have a face-to-face component. The students are required to come to campus in the first 2 years of the program three times. But now we've started to, once a year, take the program on the road. And we've gone to other countries. And so, for example, 2 years ago in May, everybody went to London. And we met there. And we're going to do the same thing again this May. And we invite our alums to come along as well and be a part of that. So we find ways to keep our alums engaged. In fact, we bring them in as adjunct faculty. We have them serve on dissertation committees, and you know, they stay connected in multiple ways, and so that helps as well.
I'll just add a small piece to that. I think one of the things that's been evidenced consistently with not only with our training center but with others, as I've heard from other across the country, when we're doing our training needs assessments, one of the things that's stressed repeatedly from the workforce is their own self-identified need for continued leadership development and training. And I think it's an area of expertise that many of them have sort of felt lacking in their own educational background and not really as fully prepared as they feel they should be to perform their jobs as well as they know they need to, whether it's, you know, how do you manage larger teams? As workforces are shrinking, people are suddenly finding themselves in a leadership position that perhaps they weren't necessarily prepared for. So I think as long as those self-identified needs exist, the need for programs like yours and other types of continuing ed types of training is there, you know, and you're just kind of responding to that identified need. I don't know if that answers your comment, but...
So in the National Leadership Academy for the Public's Health, we have a fairly convoluted set of evaluation processes. And we start out at the beginning with process evaluation, making sure that we've done everything we were said we were going to do. We look at the outcomes, and then finally we have another funded program to look at what constitutes a successful team and what, you know, what are the elements of a team that's not successful. We are continuously evaluating throughout our program whether the knowledge, attitudes, and practices that we set out at the beginning in terms of the kinds of things that we wanted our teams to learn are being achieved. The other thing is that we are surveying on a continuous basis both our individuals and our coaches who observe the teams and work with the teams, and we're using that to feed back into our program and to change or adjust what we need to change as we're going along. And we finally go back and ask all of the teams whether they achieved their personal goals, whether they achieved their leadership, their team goals, and whether they were able to complete their project or move towards successful completion of their project. And then maybe the one that might be perhaps the most personally important to us is, would they recommend the program to a colleague? So with all of those together, we've got a pretty good sort of global picture of how well we're doing. And if you're interested, you can see the posted pretty extensive evaluation from our first year on our website.
So probably a question for all three of you. I'm working on a project right now where I was looking at different coalitions, and we were trying to get a sense of how they envision leadership, how would they conceptualize leadership. And we're finding that lots of people, when they talk about leadership, they talk about clerical, like who pulls together the meeting, who, you know, does the minutes, so I'm finding people are struggling with even understanding what leadership is. So I'm just, you know, especially with the Leadership Academy, how do you get that message across? That's what we're struggling with.
So the question is, how do we define leadership in a way that moves into the deeper levels of leadership and away from, did you just...
I find that people don't understand really the concept of leadership maybe as...
What is the concept of leadership? Well, we in the Leadership Academy, what we do is we structure them from the very beginning into defining their leadership goals. So we give them a tool that we call the big picture that allows them to state very clearly what their goal is. And we want the goal to be a health improvement goal of some sort. So they have to decide what they're really working on. So they have to know where they're going. They have to develop a vision. They have to state who their collaborators or who their potential collaborators are. They have to look at the system they're going to change. So with getting them to state these kinds of details, to become very clear about these kinds of details, we're moving out of the, did you have a meeting? We're moving into the, what's your vision? How do you set about achieving your vision? And how do you know that you got there? And because it's not individual-based, but rather team-based, it's a little bit different than when you're trying to get an individual to look at their leadership skills. It's a group process. It's a little bit touchier to pin down, and very much focused on the idea of, can you create a vision? Can you put together a common language? Can you develop the relationships you need? And can you move towards your goal? And Kari, I got that you wanted to add something to that.
I was going to add, but I wasn't current. But one of the things that our coaches repeatedly kind of talk about is some teams get so caught up in the project and the work plan, do their coalition work. The coaches spend some time on many of the teams trying to move them, for example, to do the documents and the process that Carmen's describing. So some of them do need help kind of moving into that, but the tool helps right from the beginning, and the coaching starts right at the beginning, to be able to do that, so they pretty quickly get into that zone of what we're actually talking about.
So for the purposes of the recording, the Kari is adding the fact that the coaches who are assigned to each team play a pivotal role in getting the teams to learn how to focus on what the goals are, learn how to work with the concepts that we're bringing to them. So they get a lot of help and sort of continuous work on what leadership means in practice, wherever they're trying, you know, with respect to whatever their particular team issue is that they choose.
You know, and I think there's no doubt that leaders, effective leaders, need to master good management tools. You know, they need to understand how to lead a meeting and read a budget, and you know. But beyond that, you know, understanding leadership is something that's learned experientially and in talking with others who have had similar experiences, maybe perhaps at the same level. And so we do differentiate between leadership and management, and leadership being.
The issue with these coalitions, someone came in and started, like, help get them off the ground. Now she wants to move away.
Yes.
So we're trying to get a sense of through focus groups so they understand what's required for leadership. And because it's just, we thought if a charismatic leader leaves, will it fall apart? And they don't understand the concept of leadership.
It sounds like they need leadership training.
Yes.
And they need to start join one of our programs. Yes. Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Any other? Yes.
I have a more myth and bulk question for Carmen. What platform do you use and how do you fund it?
Very good nuts and bolts question. What platform do we use on Dialogue for Health and how do we fund it? Well, actually, it's kind of interesting. The platform that we use is a WebEx conferencing platform. We put that on top of a website that we've designed, and we link that to, and I didn't mention this, but we link that to a social network, a Ning site. So depending on what we're trying to do, and also seamless to anybody who's a user. Okay, depending on what we're trying to do, announce a web forum. So that's, you know, your basic email with a link to the WebEx registration site. Putting the web forum together is all uploaded onto WebEx. When we take we look at the tapes and we edit it and then put it back onto the website so that anybody who wants to listen to a web forum that has passed them by can go back and get the archived one with all of the documents, with all of the slides. And one of the features is that we have, because of the way WebEx is structured, we're able to do the same thing with respect to having questions using a chat feature, just like you saw. It's very, very vital. So we run the answers to those questions that are not answered during the web forum onto the NING site. So we port those over to the NING site. And we encourage people who are interested in a particular topic. We have a lot of stuff on built environment, a lot of stuff on global warming that is really, you know, that is really interesting to folks and building a lot of energy. So we port them over into the NING site to converse with each other and, in a sense, form a community on the NING site, having continuous conversations with each other. We don't do that. They do that themselves. They manage the site themselves. Is that answer? Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Very good. Well, please join me in congratulating our panel for an excellent session.